Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, y'all. It's Vlad Harris here with another Panther Rants podcast. It's Monday. It's the morning commute. I'm kind of nursing a cold as I tried to battle with airborne and whatever else I could muster for the last several days, and of course, I could not combat it, so I'm stuck with it for a few days. Holidays are coming up, and of course, school will be done here pretty soon for a lot of our kids. I know both of my kids are done on Thursday, and my daughter had a program. I think it was Wednesday, I believe, and my son has his tomorrow, Tuesday. So, I'm taking tomorrow off to go take care of that. So, starting off, we got the Patriots and Steelers. Although, I don't really talk much NFL on here, but, you know, sometimes. All in all, it was a good game. I always find that the NFL, probably for the last maybe 15 years, maybe a little longer, 16. To me, it's always been glorified studio wrestling. It just feels a lot that happens with the NFL is scripted. And I think, you know, if you look at the XFL when it came out, they obviously took some things off the XFL. And I think scripting, you know, I feel sometimes scripting football games is one of them. Because, you know, with the NFL, almost anything, it feels like it's, the ending's manufactured. Whether it's by referees or by players. And then you have a lot of storylines. I mean, there's been a ton of storylines this year with the NFL. Obviously, there's for one thing, you got the anthem, you got the kneeling. That's the hot topic. You got owners feuding with Roger Goodell, or how you pronounce it, mainly Jerry. You had the Jerry Jones Goodell feud going on. You had the owner of the Carolina Panthers now in some hot water because of obviously some sexual harassment stuff. So he's selling the team. Bob McNair and his, you know, what he, the stuff he said. You know, the Seattle Seahawks doing Seattle things. I mean, there's just lots of storylines. I mean, it's almost like each team has one. You know, you have, especially with Big Ben. You have the Big Ben, Antonio Brown, supposed feud. You have that going. Ben's feud with Haley. And it just, it's been an entertaining year for NFL, despite supposed the rings dropping. I mean, I think, you know, if you look at this as a show, it's been a pretty good season for the NFL. I mean, on the field and off the field with the story, with what they've done, you know, storyline-wise. And this was a crazy game, and of course had a crazy ending, which you couldn't make up. Whereas the Steelers, you thought they were down, get to the goal line. Well, not so much the goal line, the 10-yard line, pretty much. Score a touchdown. I think it's called back on a bogus roll. And there you got drama. And if we're going by a script here, I have a feeling that these two teams are going to meet again because they wouldn't do this without some drama. And, you know, in the case of the Steelers, I went to Steeler games up until I moved. I went to Steeler games from almost every home game from probably about 1989 to 2008. And the Steelers just have a history of losing the Patriots in heartbreaking situations. The 2002 AFC title game, or 2001, which however you want to say it, was a big heartbreaker. And that was a really good Steelers team. That defense that year was, oh man, it was physical, tough. The week before they just beat the crap out of Baltimore. And they came in obviously underdogs, and you thought the Steelers would take care of business, but they struggled all game, and they made a lot of bad decisions. Not so much bad decisions. Special teams were a killer. I guess they had a blocked field goal, I think, for a touchdown, a punt return for a touchdown. Pretty much everything, you know, Steelers dug themselves in a hole. They were down 24-3, I think is what it was. And they had two possessions to get back. You know, they were down three. Had two possessions to get it, you know, the score. And Cordell threw picks on both of them. And that game pretty much solidified, you know, the ending of Cordell Stewart in Pittsburgh. And it sucked because you thought that the guy was going to he was out of his funk or whatever, because Lord knows they put so much time in developing Cordell. You think they had it right, and it didn't work out. Because the next year he had a hangover going into the next season, and of course he lost his starting job to Tommy Maddox. But there was that. But let's look at 2004 when Roethlisberger started. He played New England, and they beat New England. I mean, he had a really good game. At the time, Ben was still kind of unknown, so New England didn't have enough game film on him. So obviously, when they were going to meet a second time, which was the AFC title game, they had enough film on him that they were able to beat us. And you knew that was going to happen. After that game, when we won, you had a feeling we were going to face him again. And our offense was struggling, I remember, down the stretch as well. But this game sucked, obviously, to lose like that. But if they can get Antonio Brown healthy, they got other guys that can step up. And I think, you know, next game will be a little bit different, hopefully. Hopefully it's a more positive thing for the Steelers. They just got to avoid playing Jacksonville. But until then, New England owns the Steelers, and that's that. So, we move on to Pitt. Pitt just finished up what I believe is their non-conference slate. I haven't looked at the schedule, but they played McNeese State on Saturday and struggled early with the shooting. They were missing open shots. And then second half, they just took care of business. I mean, they just tore the crap out of McNeese State in the second half, and which is what needed to be done. And they did without Ryan Luther, which is even more. I'm sure people are upset over Luther being injured. I am too. I mean, Luther was doing really good up until this happens. I mean, he's gone for a few weeks, but he was playing pretty well. I mean, he's the leader of the team, and But they picked it up. I mean, and obviously other players that's other players who haven't really got much playing time. They got, you know, thrown into the fire, and that's how it's going to be. But it's good. I mean, it was encouraging, the win itself. But ACC play is coming up, and they got to do something here. I'm not sure what they can do, but it's not going to be easy. I had the over-under for Pitt wins is 10, and I'm not sure they're going to make, if they're going to go over 10. And who knows? They might. Let's just hope they're trending upwards. Because it'll be good for them. Of course, good for us. But of course, you know, the issue with it was attendance, obviously. Not a lot of people showed up to the game. And attendance at Pitt Hoops games is just going to be what it is. I mean, it's a shame. But when they built the Pitt, they were packing it. I mean, it was good. I mean, they had a really good program in place. It was a perfect storm at the time because when Howland was there, I mean, 2001, you know, they barely missed the tournament, losing to the Big East final. Next year, they just kicked ass. Fitzgerald was packed. And then the next year, they opened the Pete. And I mean, Pitt basketball got so popular that you had a waiting list for tickets, which was absolutely phenomenal to have. And I'm not sure there's a waiting list. I have to look. I'm not sure there's a waiting list now. Probably a lot of people didn't re-up the tickets, which is a shame. Because it's still a decent program. It's just, you know, it's in a bad patch right now. But moving on. Pitt football. Obviously, you know, that our Narduzzi extension happened. We had some more people leave the program. Well, actually, you know, We had a second quarterback leave. Tom McVitie left, which is odd because I released a podcast about it. And that day I released it. His dad unfollowed me on Twitter. I'm guessing he must have listened to it. And it was nothing bad about McVitie at all, or McVitie, or however you pronounce his name. I mean, anything bad about the kid. I think he's going to have a great career. I mean, he's still a long way to go. It's just, Kenny Pickett happened. But Ben DiNucci left, which led to somewhat of a meltdown on Twitter because we had nobody to back up Kenny Pickett. People started screaming because DiNucci left. Well, a few weeks ago, we couldn't wait for DiNucci to leave Pitt. We couldn't stand him because of how he was playing. And now he leaves, and we're like, what happened? Why did he leave? Well, he left. He's going to go somewhere else and move on. So, Pitt obviously got a quarterback and is the replacement by the name of Ricky Towns. Ricky was a former, I think, 4 or 5-star quarterback. I mean, he was like he was the same class as Sam Darnold, but he's been he's bounced around several programs, and you know, he was in junior college recently, and I watched his game film, and his game film isn't bad. His tape is pretty decent, and he's similar to Kenny Pickett. And you hope he picks up the offense like Kenny does, because in case Kenny struggles or gets hurt, Ricky can come in and play. So, Yeah, I mean that was encouraging. And of course, Brian O'Neill is going pro, and which was obvious as well. O'Neill is a hell of a player, and probably has a hell of a future. So yeah, it sucked losing him too, but it is what it is. I mean, guys are going to go pro early, and I guess O'Neill has a good shot of, you know, being drafted. And he's got some impressive game film. I mean, if not an offensive lineman, he could probably be a tight end, because he obviously, for his size, got some wheels on him. And of course, one thing I forgot to mention as far as football goes, Shady McCoy. Grabs 10,000 rushing yards. As I've been talking about it for the last few weeks. He finally eclipsed it. And it's weird. I mean, the kid, it feels like yesterday. It was like yesterday where McCoy was at Pitt and he was tearing up defenses. And I remember he was splitting carries with LaRoz Stevens initially. I think at least first game of season he was. And I remember watching him play in that game against Eastern Michigan. He almost broke a few runs. You can see the rust was still, you know, was still on him. But then, I just remember Michigan State, where he just blew that big run. And you knew right then and there that he made his introduction into college football. I mean, that was his introduction that day. We had no quarterback, but every time he got the ball in that game against Michigan State, you were just on your feet, on your tiptoes, wanting to see what he was going to do. Because despite having no quarterback, you knew with McCoy, you knew that you still had a chance because you had him, and you could just give him the ball and he would do something with it. That's one thing I remember about him when he played at Pitt. And I thought he was going to, you know, stay one more year after the Sun Bowl fiasco, but he went pro and I wasn't crazy about it, but he ended up on the Eagles, which was a good thing, cuz the Eagles were still a decent football team. He ended up on some garbage franchise at the Browns. So it worked out for him. And can you imagine if he'd have stayed one more year? You would have had a backfield of McCoy, Dylan Lewis, Ray Graham. You wouldn't even have to throw the football at that point. You could just give it to one of them, and they would do something with it. But Pitt had a really good offensive line as well. I mean, one thing that Wonstead was doing at the time when he took over as coach was, he said one thing they had to do was rebuild the lines on both sides of the ball, which, you know, he did. And, you know, it's just shit with Dave. It's just a shame that it had to end. You know, things just fell apart. But, with McCoy, going back to him, You know, I thought his, you know, he's, I thought things would end for McCoy when he went to Buffalo, and that, it hasn't. I mean, the guys are still running, and what the crazy part is he's still young. I mean, this is where, you know, he's reached the age where running backs pretty much start to go downhill. But if you look at McCoy's stats, he hasn't had a lot of carries. You find that most running backs, they tend to break down when they had a year where they get the ball a lot. You know, Larry Johnson was one. He had hit that big year with Kansas City, got a lot of carries, his body just broke down after that. And Arian Foster too. Arian Foster's obviously a clear choice as well. Gary Kubiak ran the heck out of him, and his body started to fall apart. But you know, McCoy, he hasn't really had, you know, he gets carries, but I mean, it's not like he's getting 30, 40 a game. And if he keeps getting 1,000-yard seasons, and he's at the pace he is, and if he can stay durable, you know, he may move up further up that rushing chart. I mean, he still can play. He's got the one thing about McCoy is that he's got the burst. That burst is just amazing. Even the stone, the guy can burst. So as long as he keeps his cuts, his moves, his burst, and stays healthy, he'll be good for a while. Oh, anyway, I'll stop babbling. Hell to Pitt.